Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation today, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and if you would like to ask a question at that time, please press star one and record your name. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Susan Buchanan. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Stedman, and thank you everyone for joining us today to hear NOAA's monthly El Nino forecast update for January. I'm Susan Buchanan, Public Affairs Officer with NOAA Communications and External Affairs at the National Weather Service. If you have additional questions after this briefing, you can contact me at 301-427-9000. That's 301-427-9000. The updated forecast is now available on the Climate Prediction Center's website. And today you'll hear from Mike Halpert. He is the Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. And following his brief remarks, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. And now I'd like to turn the call over to Mike.
Thanks, Susan. We're here once again to talk about El Nino and the anticipated impacts during the remainder of the winter and early spring over the United States. NOAA is the lead federal agency for monitoring and forecasting climate variability, which includes phenomena such as El Nino and La Nina. NOAA declared the arrival of El Nino in March 2015 with above normal sea surface temperatures across the equatorial Pacific Ocean increasing throughout the summer and fall. Our forecast this month is similar to last month, with the expectation that the current El Nino will remain strong through the rest of the winter, gradually weakening during the spring before transitioning to ENSO-neutral conditions during the late spring or early summer. For those interested in numbers and how this event currently ranks in the historical record, the initial October, November, December Oceanic Niño Index, or ONI value, tied the value recorded during October, November, December 1997 at 2.3, which is the largest in the historical record, making this event comparable to the 97-98 episode. The peak value of the ONI has either occurred this previous month or will next month. However, it's important to remember that this does not mean that this El Nino and its impacts have peaked, as we've just entered the period when we see peak impacts over North America. It's also very important to remember that El Nino is not only measured by sea surface temperatures. The atmospheric response to the warming is just as important. And during December, some aspects of the atmospheric response were slightly stronger than December of 97 as well as December of 1982. This included tropical rainfall in the Central Pacific as well as the Equatorial Southern Oscillation Index, a measure of sea level pressure. However, convection or tropical rainfall in the Eastern Pacific as well as the lower and upper level winds that we track were still weaker than we'd seen in 1982 and 1997. So what does that mean regarding impacts during the remainder of the winter? First, it's critical to realize that although we know what the typical relationships are between El Nino and global climate patterns, the climate system is far more complicated than just El Nino. So none of the typical impacts, or what we've often seen in the past, are guaranteed. But these real strong El Niños are known to exert a significant influence on our weather and climate, particularly during winter. And some of what we've seen so far during December and January is quite consistent with that, including wetness in the southeast and the mild conditions seen during December over the northern part of the country. But other things aren't, including the flooding on the Mississippi River we've seen or flooding in the Pacific Northwest. During the beginning of January, Southern California got a taste of what's likely to come again later on this winter. And while it's recently become cold in the northern plains, we anticipate that to be transitory, with above normal temperatures returning by the end of the month. The current Climate Prediction Center outlook for the months of January, February, March favor above normal precipitation across the entire southern part of the United States, including all of California to Florida and then along the East Coast to southern New England, with above normal temperatures most likely in Alaska, out west, and across the north, with below average temperatures favored only in the southern plains and in the southeast. While El Nino sets up a very active rainfall pattern that favors wetter than average conditions in the southern tier of the United States, please remember that we don't and you really shouldn't attribute any one storm system to El Nino. Thanks, and with that, I'll turn it back to Susan for any questions.
Okay, we're ready for our Q&A, Stedman, if you'd like to facilitate that for us.
Thank you. As a reminder to participants, if you would like to ask a question on the call today, please press star, then one, and record your name. Our first question comes from Seth Bornstein. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for doing this. I actually have two questions. First, you said the peak value for the ONI is expected either last month, this month, or next month. Is it fair to say that, as far as you know, this El Nino hasn't peaked yet? And when, you know, at what are you looking for to say here is the peak? Is it just ONI, because you do talk about atmospheric response, or is it also involving impacts? And then the second question is, I'm pretty, you know, from what I hear, the issues with Alex in the Atlantic probably have very little to do with El Nino. I'm not sure, if you can address both Alex in the Atlantic and now dissipating Pali in the Pacific. Those are very unusual things to have those storms form in January. Is there an El Nino factor? And if there isn't, what is going on?
Gee, that's an easy one, Seth. What's going on? Let me start with the peak question. And so, right, there's different ways folks look at it. You know, the way NOAA officially tracks El Nino is with the ONI, the Oceanic Nino Index. And that, when we say has peaked in terms of that, it's likely that either October, November, December, possibly November, December, January, that will likely be the peak. And as we go forward through the spring, we'll see that start to drop off. But, you know, I don't know that it's really that significant that, you know, if the ONI drops from 2.3 to 2 or 2.1 or something. I mean, what really is significant for those of us in the U.S. is when we see the strongest impacts. And that will happen over the next, you know, couple of months. I mean, this is the time of year when El Nino acts the most reliably on the kind of the annual cycle of what goes across, what goes on with the jet stream over the Pacific. And so we would certainly expect that impacts to continue, you know, well through the rest of the winter into the early part of the spring, even as the ONI value and the ocean starts its gradual return towards normal. As far as tropical systems, well, you know, obviously an Atlantic system in January is I don't think it's quite unprecedented, but it's certainly very, very unusual. You know, to my knowledge and understanding, there's really no El Nino signal there. The system that was out in the Central Pacific, you know, that could be. I mean, I can believe that. I don't really know off the top of my head whether we've seen that type of thing before. Certainly, that system did give a nice boost to the low-level winds out there, and we'll have to see whether or not that has any impact on the future development of ENSO. But again, you know, these kind of, and they're typically weaker, you know, more tropical system, tropical storms, certainly not the hurricane type things. You know, I guess they happen and they basically just give us evidence that you know, El Nino isn't the only thing, and there's certainly a lot of other variability in the climate system.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Miriam Kramer. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you for taking my question. So I'm curious, was the most recent westerly wind burst among the strongest measured, maybe stronger than 97 and 98, as one source had told us? Thank you.
Not that I'm aware of it. It's possible it was for this time of year. But, you know, again, that was these westerly wind bursts. This one in particular, I was associated with the development of that tropical system. A very, very far to the south system, actually, almost shockingly far to the south. I think I saw somewhere it was close to 5 north, which typically when you get that close to the equator, there's not enough of the forces to drive these kind of storms. I'm not aware that the magnitude of that was anything, you know, out of the, you know, like record-breaking type thing. So I wouldn't play up that aspect too much here. It's also kind of late in the it's not really clear as to how much of an effect this will have on the thermocline. You know, it is now we're into the middle of January, and again, the kind of the annual cycle of these things plays a role in what goes on. And so even though it was certainly a very, very significant westerly wind burst, we're still kind of watching to see how much impact that's going to have on the subsurface and eventually the surface.
Thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Paul Rogers. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. Two quick ones. I'm curious about the length of the El Nino conditions, you know, continuing into the spring. And I was just looking at the forecast probabilities there, with the 87% through March, April, May, and 62% through April, May, June. And as you know, the winter rainfall season is normally pretty much over by April 1st in California. And the first question is, I'm wondering if you think that could be extended this year into May or perhaps even later because of this event. And then second, just if you have any questions about, I mean, any thoughts about the growing increased likelihood of La Nina on the back end.
So let me take the first part of it first. You know, I suspect, you know, if the rainy season does last a little longer, you know, that's really hard to say. But one of the things that does play a role, and that's kind of why we also don't see necessarily a big impact in November, December, is that the annual cycle and its interactions with ENSO play the really significant role here. So, you know, certainly in the central and northern part of the state, I think the rainy season goes longer, so it might keep things more active there. Whether or not it keeps, you know, activity and systems going into the southern part of California into April, that's, you know, that's really a question I can't answer. I would say as long as we see convection in the tropical Pacific going on, it might help to contribute to a wetter spring in the central and northern part of the state, and potentially even up into the Pacific Northwest. As far as La Nina, well, that's one that, you know, I guess our last probability was still favoring a neutral, but of course that's only, I think it was maybe JAS or ASO, but we are up to a, you know, 40% chance of La Nina there, which is getting close to twice the normal or the climatological probability of La Nina for that season. So, you know, it's certainly something we're looking at. If you, you know, look through the historical record, you know, you can find instances of both cases. You know, obviously the classic one was 97, 98 that rapidly changed into a very strong and prolonged La Nina. Interestingly, 82, 83, didn't really work that way. The winter of 83-84, the ocean was a little on the cooler side, but it really never qualified, and we kind of had to wait another year to see La Nina develop, I believe, in 84-85. So that's one that we're certainly going to be watching. Obviously, you know, folks are somewhat familiar with the spring barrier of predictability for these phenomena, so we probably won't start to get, you know, confident until, you know, May, June-ish. I mean, unless it's really just, you know, the whole bottom drops out of what's going on in the Pacific. And at this point, there's no indication that we'll see a transition that quickly.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Doral Rice. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. Yeah, my main question was about La Nina, so that's you've already answered that. Just more generally, how far back does the historical record go for these ONI and the El Nino index that you're talking about? And is it, you know, we can say this was like tied with 97 for the strongest, and records go back how far?
Right, to 1950 is where we're confident enough in our data set to start the Oceanic Niño Index, 1950.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Stephen Dorsey. Your line is open.
Hi there. Yeah, just for a layman's interpretation of the outlook for the rest of this winter, is it fair to say that basically most of the U.S. can expect warmer than average, wet rest of winter so far?
Well, the seasonal outlooks will update next week. The current outlooks for January, February, March, really the favored areas, the areas favored to be above normal are the West, and then it's about the middle half of the country northward. So it's about, you know, Missouri, Kentucky, Virginia, maybe Wyoming, from that area to the north. We actually do tilt across the Gulf Coast and in Texas to below average. We see that, you know, fairly frequently with these types of El Niños, that the Gulf Coast region becomes wetter than average and cooler than average. Not necessarily that kind of bone-chilling Arctic air, but still just kind of below average temperatures. Rainfall, we still, there's a, you know, again, now it's kind of the, it's a flip. The wetter than average is, you know, probably the southern two-thirds of the country and then up the East Coast. But we do see areas around the Great Lakes and in the Northern Rockies in particular. We would expect those areas to be drier than average. Now, having said that, and of course, these are, you know, probabilistic forecasts, so their probabilities in the neighborhood for the dry areas are 40 or 50%. Both the 82, 83, and 97, 98 events were actually fairly wet coast to coast, and we've seen some indication certainly through December and even into the first part of January here that this might end up being one of those types of winters. It's not what we're favoring at this point, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if we don't see a lot of areas that ended up dry this winter.
Okay, so basically it sounds like a mixed bag. Is that accurate to say? I mean, what makes El Nino different this winter or the different effect this winter than in previous winters?
Well, the real strong events, and again, so I'm really just looking at a couple, and so now it becomes challenging in terms of sample size. I'm only looking at, you know, a couple of cases. But the jet across the Pacific becomes so strong and energized that there's really an incredible number of storms. We don't see long periods when the country goes, you know, kind of quiet and inactive. There's some area that's getting storminess, you know. Last week it was further to the south. This week the jet has shifted a little further north out west, and Northern California and the Pacific Northwest look like they're going to see, you know, 5 to 10 inches of rain. So it's the type of winter that the Pacific jet becomes so strong that you know, there's enough variability in the latitudinal extent that we, like I said, at least for 97, 98, 82, 83, and so far what we've seen this winter is that really everybody kind of shares in on at least normal, if not above normal, precipitation.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Henry Fountain. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks a lot. Could you talk a little bit more about the Mississippi flooding situation? If there's not a strong El Nino signal there, what's the consensus as to what's been going on?
Well, like I said, it's not something, you know, typically the Missouri area is one that kind of falls in between what we see in you know, looking at all of the El Nino events. But it is possible that there was some contribution from El Nino. Again, like I said, the jets are just stronger than average, so it's possible that it's not that we necessarily favor a dry winter in Missouri. It's just kind of falls in between the areas. Typically, it's drier more in the Ohio Valley and wetter further back over like Nebraska and Kansas. So, you know, was the storm, you know, a little more, the jet stream's a little more active because of El Nino? Certainly a possibility. You know, sometimes, look, we see extremes absent El Nino, certainly. You know, there's all kinds of factors that go into extremes. A warming planet, you know, the atmosphere can hold more moisture, so we know that the heavy rain events have become heavier over the past 30 to 50 years. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into extreme events. You know, if El Nino played a role, it was probably a minor one, but it certainly could have played some role with that.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Patricia Kitchen. Your line is open.
Hi there. Thanks very much. Yes, I'm looking at the prospects for January, February, March for the Northeast. Especially our interest is in the coastal area of New York. And I know from previous calls, El Nino doesn't have the hugest effect on this area. I'm wondering if you could just speak to what other elements you see at play.
Well, oftentimes the Northeast is dominated more by something we call the Arctic Oscillation or the North Atlantic Oscillation. Mm-hmm. You know, December was obviously very warm, really over most of the country, but certainly into the Northeast. You know, there probably El Niño is playing a role, as well as what we saw, this positive phase of the Arctic Oscillation. Recently, it's been, you know, more normal. I guess people are kind of shivering because they're not quite used to it.
right.
But, yeah, I know. So, but we have seen, again, this Arctic Oscillation has gone into its negative phase. There's we actually think we understand links to some other sub-seasonal variability that contributed to that. Going forward, though, to be honest, I'm expecting that after the next week or two, the potential certainly exists, and we favor it in our week three and week four forecasts, as well as our seasonal outlooks, for a return to mild conditions, or at least above normal conditions in the Northeast. So, you know, it's certainly possible that this will be a year that you know, kind of like 97-98 was, where El Niño played the biggest role, and so we didn't really see, other than I guess January, the way it's shaping, could end up to be more normal for winter. Not certainly nothing extreme at this point, but maybe a little taste of winter here.
Yeah, thank you.
A reminder to participants, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one and record your name. Our next question comes from Sarah Hammond. Your line is open.
Thank you. Mike, you addressed this somewhat in a previous response, but I think the question I have is for you to talk about the somewhat inconsistency of storms coming. And the reason I ask this is that there was been a lot of reporting, El Niño's coming. We had a couple of storms last week here in southern Arizona. The 10-day outlook is for no rain. And on one of the local news channels the other night, the anchor looked at the meteorologist and said, is El Niño over? So can you talk about, you know, what people should expect in general?
Well, certainly, you know, El Niño is not over, so I hope the reporter got it right. You know, as far as rains and storminess shifting further south, you know, I certainly expect we will see that. You know, there is certainly always some levels of subseasonal variability. I mentioned briefly the Arctic Oscillation earlier that plays a role at times. The jet is not like it's not like a string that you just, you know, you kind of thumbtack in place and it stays. There's always forces, and so it shifts, you know, sometimes further north, sometimes further south. The key, though, is that it's extended, so it really is extending all the way across the Pacific, and it's very strong. And I have no reason not to expect that at times over the next, you know, 8 weeks or whatever, we'll see that the jet will shift further south, and we'll see, you know, more storminess back into the more traditional areas across the southern part. You know, I was talking with somebody, and they were talking actually about 98, where they said that actually January of 98 wasn't particularly wet. It was really February and March where they saw the majority of the rains. So not to say that that's the way this year is, because all El Niños, you know, the El Niños might be the same, but the forces that are around them that they interact with are certainly never exactly the same. But at this point, there's no reason to not expect that there will be more rains coming at some point, you know, over the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Willie Dry. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. Just wondered if there was any way to attribute any of the winter tornadoes a few weeks ago to El Niño, directly or indirectly, and if we might be looking at any other unusual outbreaks when the warmer weather, Doug, that you forecast returns.
You know, that, again, looking historically at El Niño, it does favor, you know, a shift in some severe weather outbreaks across the southeast. Oftentimes it's more Florida than, I guess, where this last outbreak was. You know, to attribute one outbreak to El Niño is a real challenging thing. I guess the best I can say is that it's consistent with what we've seen in the past, and so it's certainly not unheard of, and I would imagine at least emergency planners are aware and across the South that, that when we have El Niños like this, it's something that, that they need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. And as far as any sort of spike in when warmer conditions return, is that I realize you can't accurately forecast it, but is that just a possibility?
Yeah, again, it's, you know, could it happen again? Sure. You know, like I said, those are the type of things that you know, outbreaks, tornado outbreaks are something that the science of forecasting, you know, really more than a couple days out is really challenging. That's some of the activities that we're working on here at the Climate Prediction Center. We're looking at sub-seasonal or even seasonal severe weather outlooks. But we've really just kind of started looking at that. And so, you know, other than saying, you know, that again, the patterns that we oftentimes see with ENSO with a strong jet across the South, you know, do probably tilt the odds a little bit towards severe weather. I mean, I don't think we can really say much more than that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question on the call today, please press star then one and record your name. And we have no further questions in queue at this time.
Okay, thanks, Deadman. So if there are no further questions, we'll wrap the call. If you have follow-up questions later today, feel free to give me a call. Again, this is Susan, and I'm at 301-427-9000. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you all for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect at this time.